recording so he can hear the shout outs. But yes, no, I mean Harry, not Hirsch.
So. No, because Harry's brother was my roommate in Yeshiva, Michael Kenner.
Okay, well, you can say hello to him because he's listening to the recording.
Beef Kenner. Beef. Yeah, Beef Kenner.
Okay.
All right, so we have one. The Shama should have Aliyah.
Amen.
Anybody else? I see Harry is waving his hand at us.
Yes. Learning should be Sutra Fula Shalema for my mother-in-law, Bela Bat Esther, who unfortunately is in the hospital and dealing with a couple of issues. And hopefully the learning will help her out.
Fula Shalema.
And on a happier note, to as a celebration for my 31st anniversary, my wife has decided that I can stay around for another year.
Mazel tov.
So at least on a happier note.
Good.
Yeah.
Hey. All right. So let's get started. Two things that I do have to note. One is going to be at the end of this year, but one for now. Next week, I am giving a shiur to our women's Beit Midrash, the university students, from 6:30 to 8. So the question is, could we learn at 8:15 next week? It will be Hanukkah, so, you know, I don't know how that affects people's plans, but shall we do 8:15 next week?
I just checked my social calendar. Apparently, I'll be home.
Okay. Well, if Sammy's home, then it's 8:15 next week. Okay. Shkayach. All right, so we are on Hey Amud Aleph, and the last bit that we did there in the Gemara, we were talking about the reasons not to hold a wedding on Motzei Shabbos. So our first explanation that we brought was concern that he's going to spend Shabbos calculating his wedding meal expenses. We asked, but you're allowed to do that because it's calculation for a mitzvah. So Rabbi Zeira gave a different answer. Rabbi Zeira said he might be so distracted by having the wedding Motzei Shabbos that he actually ends up shechting for the meal on Shabbos. That's the concern. So the Gemara said, well, if that's true, if that's such a concern, then what about when Yom Kippur falls out on a Monday? And everybody is shechting in order to be able to have a big meal before the fast. So we should be concerned. You can end up shechting on Shabbos. We should move Yom Kippur off of Monday. That was the Gemara's question. And we give a couple of answers in the Gemara, and we'll get to those. But I wanted to note two things. One from a Tosfos and one from a Ritva. So I'm going to share the screen with the Gemara, and you'll see Tosfos there. Hang on. There's a classic Mishnah in Chulin, which talks about a separate issue called Oso V'yes Bino. The Torah says that I am not allowed to shecht an animal and her young on the same day. Can't shecht a cow and her young on the same day, even though the language of the Torah sounds masculine, Oso V'yes Bino. It should be the bull and its young. Nonetheless, we understand it to refer to the cow and her offspring. So the rule is, not only may we not shecht the animal and her young on the same day, but even if that shechita happens by different people. In other words, even if, let's say, Eldon shechts the cow and Brian shechts the calf, nonetheless, that's already a problem. So the Mishnah in Chulin says there are certain days during the year when everybody is having meat. And therefore, if I sell an animal to somebody and I'm planning on shechting its parent or its child, I have to let the buyer know, you should know, I'm planning on shechting on such and such a day to avoid creating a violation of this prohibition of Oso V'yes Bino. That's the rule. And the Mishnah in Chulin gives you 4 days during the year that are known for this shechita, and then it adds a fifth. And the fifth one is Erev Yom Kippur, because people are likely to have a lot of animals shechted on Erev Yom Kippur for their meal. So Tosfos asks a question. You framed this in our Gemara as a concern about Yom Kippur falling out on Monday, and therefore everyone's going to shecht, and therefore you're concerned they're going to shecht on Shabbos. But Yom Kippur is an also-ran in that Mishnah. Yom Kippur is not in the main list of four found in that Mishnah. So why didn't you give me one of the real ones on the list, one of the main days that are on the list? Why did you mention Yom Kippur specifically? Tosfos here, where it says Ella, asks that question. He says, Tema, he says, I'm surprised. I might knock at Yom Kippurim. Why did you mention Yom Kippur? Delohavi Ella Rabbi Yossi Aglili. That's only within Rabbi Yossi Aglili's view. Kiddisnana, as the Mishnah in Chulin says, Ba'arba Prokin Bashana, four times a year, Hamocher Behema Lachavero Tzarech Lahodiyo Ima Macharti Lishnot, four times during the year. You sell an animal to somebody, you have to let them know. I sold off the mother for Shechting, dot, dot, dot. And the Mishnah concludes, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, even Erev Yom Kippur in Galil. Setosfo says, why didn't you choose one of the other days that's in that Mishnah that everybody agrees is a problem? So he says, V'yesh lomar, you could answer, De'be'erev yom ha'kippurim hayu regilu naharbos ba'ofos ubedagim. He says, I'll tell you why. These other days that you talk about in the Mishnah, it's true, are more likely to find people shechting large animals. However, erev yom kippur, they shechted a lot of birds. They prepared a lot of fish for the meal before Yom Kippur. And he quotes you a medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, although I looked for it and I couldn't find it, but he quotes you a medrash in Bereishis Rabbah to that effect. That specifically you have a lot of poultry and you have a lot of fish shechted on those days. So Tosva says that means it won't make it into the Mishnah, because Oso V'es B'no is only a concern for large animals. However, it is a concern for us in terms of the possibility of shechting on Shabbos. Anybody know why they would have preferred to shecht birds and fish specifically for the meal before Yom Kippur?
I'm going to guess it's because it's lighter.
Yeah.
Maybe easier to fast. I mean, you know, if you eat heavy food, maybe harder to fast, or maybe...
Interesting. So Jack brings in the medical expertise and says it may be easier to fast with the lighter food.
The chickens, probably because we have the chickens from Shlugin Kapuris. So
Rabbi Grossman says maybe you have the chickens, not to mention the fish from Kaparos, because we have precedent that actually there were those who did Kaparos with fish. I don't know how you swung it around your head. I think it had to be in the fish tank, probably. But there actually was a practice of doing kaparos with fish. So maybe that's where this comes from. I'll offer you a third possibility. It's a halacha, I think it's even brought in Shulchan Aruch, that you should be careful with the Sudam Avsekas, with a meal before Yom Kippur, not to become so full that you come into Yom Kippur with a level of confidence and arrogance. A person with a stuffed belly doesn't have the same ability to appeal to Hashem as somebody who's feeling a little emptier. So it's possible that would be another reason why they would opt for the lighter foods, actually, so as not to come in feeling all full and stuffed. But that's Tosfos' description. Yes,
Elon. Reason that fish, because that fish survived the mabul, and that because they were sinless? And we hope to go into Yom Kippur sinless.
Interesting. I don't know. If I had been able to find the Bereishis Rabbah that Tosfos alludes to, I would have a better chance of answering whether that's what he meant. It's an interesting idea, certainly. He just says it's a day of forgiveness. I would have assumed that the kaparos are the factor, but I can't prove that. It could well be that it's related to them surviving. Of course, then the question is, well, what about the birds? What'll you do with that? Okay. Eldon, you got me? Yes.
Rabbi Tuchita, in today's day and age, where farmers can sell their cows at market and then they can move three or four different times, especially if they're selling their calves, how does the shrek that goes up to the farm know who the genealogy of the cow is?
Right. So the straightforward answer that I would give without knowing how it's actually done commercially is that as a general principle, you don't have to worry about this. As a general principle, I can buy an animal and shecht it and not worry. What we're saying is these times of the year, the merchant has an obligation to let the buyer know, hey, I sold the mother, because everybody is shechting at that time. But it's the duty is on the merchant to notify the buyer. You don't need to actually worry as somebody who is about to shecht something. It's not on you to worry.
Who it's that case of Oisov es Beno.
Yeah.
Who is over, the first one or the second one or both?
Second one.
Second one.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make sense that if the seller of the cow, let's say, knows that he sold the mother, then he wouldn't go out of, and he owned, and he also has in possession the baby calf, that he wouldn't be obligated not to sell that on the same day.
So what we learn in that Mishnah on Chulin is that there's no such obligation. You just have to warn people.
You can sell it. You just tell them don't check it.
Correct. Much like in other mitzvahs, you know, we have a whole discussion in the Mishnayos at the end of Shviyas about cases in which I sell somebody farming equipment during Shemitah. And the concern, if I sell the equipment to somebody who is known to be someone who's not so careful, then I have concerns. However, I'm allowed to sell it to somebody who might just be looking to take advantage of a sale, knowing that the market is weak for farming equipment during Shemitah. So they want to take advantage of the opportunity. It's not as though I normally need to worry, as long as I notify people of the potential violation. Then that I've done my job and can rely on them to do theirs. Okay. That was all one point. The other point was the Ritva, and we mentioned this last time, but I wanted you to see it. So it's on the source sheet. It's source Aleph on the source sheet. I'm going to share the source sheet as well. So you can see it here. The Ritva writes, regarding this idea that we should move Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur comes out on a Monday, Ve'ika dekashya lehu. Some ask, Deheyach dochin Yom HaKippur mishum gizei razu. How could you push off Yom Kippur because of this decree? On what basis would you push off Yom Kippur because you're concerned that people might shecht on Shabbos? Why was that even a question in the Gemara? So his answer is, Umetarzi, they answer, Daha adifa didachinan mishum yarkayo mishum mesaya. He says, I have news for you. This is actually a really good reason to push off Yom Kippur. On the scale of reasons to push off Yom Kippur, this one actually ranks pretty high. As opposed to the concern that if Yom Kippur falls out in sequence with Shabbos, you know, Friday or Sunday, we're concerned that they won't have fresh vegetables for Shabbos if Yom Kippur comes out on a Friday. We're concerned, Mishum Mesaya, we're concerned that if, God forbid, someone dies Friday night and then Yom Kippur is Sunday, they're going to go 2 days without burial. So we push off Yom Kippur, we do that, in order to avoid hitting Friday or Sunday for them. So this reason is also not a bad reason. That's number one. V'yesha pirshu, and then he says, some have explained, d'hachi kyamar, that this is what the Gemara is saying. Not that we would push off Yom Kippur, but rather, sheyidche Yom HaKippurim mishum se'udaso, shalo laso se'uda be'erev shalo. Maybe what it's saying is not that Yom Kippur should be pushed off, but that people should not have a big se'uda on Erev Yom Kippur. Maybe that's what's going on, some explain. But he says the language of the Gemara doesn't really sound like that. It sounds like we're talking about pushing off Yom Kippur. Not to mention, I don't think anyone's going to get away with saying you shouldn't have a big meal on Erev Yom Kippur. I wish you luck with that idea. Okay. So we're back in the Gemara now, and I'm going to share the Gemara with you. And again, what we're doing at this point is we've just asked the question of, if you're telling me don't get married Motzei Shabbos because you're worried that people are going to shecht on Shabbos, so as Abaye asks here, if you see where the arrow is, right, it's showing up on your screen? Amar le Abaye, Ela me'ata Yom HaKippurim shechalios b'sheni b'Shabbos yidache, if Yom Kippur falls on Monday, you should push off Yom Kippur, gezeirah shema yishchot ben of, out of concern that if you don't, he might end up shechting a bird on Shabbos. So Abaye gives you two answers. First answer, Hasam dilanafshe lo tarid, hacha dilacherim tarid. So his first answer is, I'm just going to mute everybody by default because I'm getting background noise. He says, first of all, when you're dealing with Yom Kippur, it's a meal for yourself. So while it's true that you want to make sure you're going to eat, you're not so focused on that you're going to shecht on Shabbos. You're preparing a wedding, you're feeding other people, at that point you get nervous. You're worried about taking care of everybody else. And because you're worried about taking care of everybody else, you're so focused on that, then we're worried that you're going to do something inappropriate on Shabbos. People get more stressed when they're dealing with worrying about somebody else. It's very similar to a discussion that we have in Halacha regarding the issue of hefsed, of loss, and what will justify, what kind of leniencies will justify when it comes to hosting other people, as opposed to where it's for your own meal. We won't justify as much, we won't be as lenient when it's for your own meal as we will be if you're hosting somebody else, because you get very stressed about hosting other people. That's Abaye's first answer. Inami, alternatively, Hasam isle ravcha. And I think someone said this, it might have been Dov last time. Hasam isle ravcha. Hacha lesle ravcha. When you're dealing with Yom Kippur, the Yom Kippur being on a Monday, so you don't need to shecht on Shabbos. You have a whole day. You're not having your Suda Mavsekes until Sunday afternoon. If the wedding is right after Shabbos, you don't have that kind of time. That's the difference. So the Gemara says, well, now that you've given me this reason for not having weddings Saturday night, Hashda Asis Lahachi, now that we've arrived at this point, Erev Shabbos Nami, you should also say that this is a reason not to get married on Friday. We gave one reason already not to get married on Friday, and that had to do with initial relations on Friday night. But now I have a second reason, Gezera Shema Yishchot Ben Of, because again, if you're having this big wedding on Friday, there's a concern. You're going to have your meal on Shabbos, and you might shecht, and you think you're getting it in before Shabbos, but you're really not. So that would be the concern. Okay, everybody with me? Everyone follows that? We're good?
Why would you shecht?
Can I ask a dumb question?
Oh, if you insist.
Yom Kippur usually has to come out 10 days after Rosh Hashanah. That's, you know.
Yep.
Unless that is to be true.
Yes.
Okay. In the time of the Gemara, how did they count days? I mean, yes, we have calendars.
Okay, so yeah. No, when we talk about pushing it off, what we're talking about is making astronomical calculations in advance, which you will employ in order to arrange for the months that precede it to be 29 days versus 30 days in such a way that you will avoid having Yom Kippur come out on that day of the week. They're making this calculation months and months in advance. When Hillel II sets up the calendar in the 5th century, and I'm crediting it to him, although there's a lot of discussion about exactly when this calendar was fixed. But when they did it, they sat down and mapped out how the months would have to work out in order to ensure that Yom Kippur would never be a Friday or a Sunday. If this Gemara had had its way, you could have had Monday as well as part of that math. Eventually, it just doesn't work. But they are able to play enough games with it in order to make sure that on the one hand, Rosh Chodesh ends up being around the time of the new moon, and yet on the other hand, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur fall out on the days they're supposed to fall out on. That's the way it works. That's the idea. Jack?
I was going to just ask quickly. I'm not sure, I understand why there would be a concern about shechting on for a Friday wedding, because that's the first thing you do in preparation for the meat would be to shecht it, which you have to do much earlier.
Right.
If the wedding, say the wedding is Friday afternoon,
right,
then you have to be shechting in the morning. It wouldn't be a havamina that you would even come to shecht at night on Shabbat.
Right. So I think you're spoiled by the world in which we live. In which you plan everything out with a caterer in advance, you pay for it, and everything else is done. And if extra people show up during the wedding, or if something wasn't calculated correctly, then hopefully they've planned in a buffer. If they haven't planned in a buffer, you're out of luck. They're not doing anything more. Back in the day, they were not planning in a buffer at all. They were preparing as much as they thought they were going to actually need for the wedding. And if during the meal there are more people or people are eating more food than they had anticipated, then you would actually shecht more. That was the way it went, apparently. Such that
so,
this becomes a concern.
Robert, you're a cheater.
Yeah.
You say shecht, cook, eat. But
that's a good order for it.
What happened? When did the first process of salting to draw the blood out come up.
So that's going to have to happen in between the salt, in between the shecht and cook. Unless you broil it, in which case you wouldn't need to do the salting.
Right, or barbecue it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's correct. Okay. So the Gemara now goes back to the whole Wednesday wedding. We've gone through at this point doing it on Wednesday, making sure that he's going to do the 3-day prep, allowing for Tuesday because of the Roman officers, allowing for Monday in the event that, God forbid, one of them loses a parent. We don't want to do Friday, even though historically, as Chuck noted last week, that has in fact been done. Nonetheless, they'd like to avoid Friday, and the Gemara is going to come back to the Friday issue further along. We don't want to do Motzai Shabbos either. So the Gemara now comes back to the Wednesday wedding. We said that you hold the wedding on Wednesday in order that, in the event that she is supposed to be a besula, she's never been with a man, and he sleeps with her and there's no indication that she is, in fact, a besula, he'll be able to go to Beis Din to find out if there are witnesses that something happened in between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin. That's the idea. Again, to be clear, as we said this when we started the Masechta, if whatever went on with her happened before the Kiddushin, that's a whole different story. The fear here is that what happened was between Kiddushin and Nisuin, in which case they are prohibited to each other, and in fact there's potentially a capital case if there are witnesses and there was a warning and so on. So what's supposed to happen is he goes to Beis Din Thursday morning and finds out by making this big announcement, hey, anybody know what happened? I have to say, this sounds like a very bad way to go about things. There has to be a better way to do this. Nonetheless, that's the plan. So the Gemara asks a question. When you say Wednesday, said he'll go to Beis Din on Thursday, does that mean that initial relations have to happen on Wednesday night? So that there will be very little time elapsed between then and the Beis Din, and therefore we don't worry that he's going to calm down? Or is it okay to have a daytime wedding on Wednesday? Let them have the wedding at 1 in the afternoon on Wednesday, or 11:30 in the morning. They have initial relations earlier, and then, eventually, they'll go to Beis Din on Thursday morning if there's a need. That is the question the Gemara asks. I'm going to share the Gemara with you here on the screen. We are again on Hey Amid Aleph, middle of the page. Iboyalahu is our question. It's right across from the beginning of the Tosfos Rid. Ibayalahu. Besula nises berevi'i v'niv'eles berevi'i v'lo chayshinan le'ikurei daita. Can you say that the besula gets married on Wednesday and they have initial relations on Wednesday during the day, and we are not concerned that he's going to cool off if he doesn't find evidence that she was a besula? O Dilma Besula Nises Beraviv and if Alas Bachamishi. Or is it that no, the wedding can be on Wednesday. However, first relations have to be Wednesday night. Dechaishina Liikure Daita, because we are concerned that otherwise he might calm down and not go to Beis Din. That is the Gemara's question. Now, here it's important to note something that the Rashba points out here, which is, and I'm going to share the source sheet, so I'll be able to show it to you on the screen. We have a basic principle in halacha that relations are not supposed to happen during the daytime. As a general principle, halachically, men and women are not supposed to have relations during the daytime. It is considered to be chutzpah. It's considered to be something very brazen for this to happen. It's more modest if it happens in the dark. So the Rashba asks, this Gemara seems to think that it's okay. Ibayalahu, besula nises bervi, klomar bebayis afel. The Rashba says it must be talking about for them to have relations in a dark house. In other words, the fact that it's during the daytime, if they have shades, if they're able to eliminate light, is going to be okay. And he goes on to note that Gemara says if he's a Talmid Chacham, then he can use his garment to cover the light. The point is that it should be done in the dark. Halav hachi Yisrael kadoshim hein ve'in misham shemitosein b'yom. The point being that it is an element of kedusha that we don't have relations during the daytime. That's that's what the Rashba assumes, and that's in fact the Gemara. So much so, the Gemara points out that in Megillas Esther, we're told bo'erev hiva'o v'boker hishava, that when Achashverosh has his contest with all the women who go to him, it's always at night, not during the day. And so the Medrash on that says, see that? Even Achashverosh, as awful as he was, at least had manners. That's the statement about Achashverosh. So over here, where the Gemara is discussing this and asking the question of whether they can do this for the first time during the daytime, it's assuming that it will be in the dark. Clear? Okay. So
just a quick question on this.
Yes, Chuck.
I've always wondered about this halacha at the time that Yitzchak and Sarah were having relations and were witnessed, I think it was by Avimelech.
Yitzchak and Rivka,
yes.
So, is it having...
They found it something, and I think that he was looking through the window, but given that it would have been dark if it was night, he wouldn't have seen anything. He must have been looking through the window during the day.
So, I thought that there they say it's not necessarily the act of relations itself, but that they're conducting themselves in the manner of husband and wife with a degree of intimacy. I thought that that was what it was, but I'm calling it up on here now. You can all see it. So,
I think Rashi says Matamrik is Ishto, and the Rashi explains that they're having relations.
So does he say relations, or does he say that they're acting in the manner of husband, wife? It's true that mitzachek often does. That's where we get the idea with Yishmael, that mitzachek may refer to gilarayos v'chasamam avodazara, so we bring that. But, interesting. Chuck, can you see what I just called up here? Is that legible?
Yeah.
Okay. So, the Medrash Seichel Tov. Vayarvi hine Yitzchak mitzachek esriv ka ishto. Hayamishamesh mitaso bayom. Okay, he was doing this, in fact, during the day. Ubishvil shen is gana Yitzchak bekach, and because Yitzchak was degraded through that activity, lefichach gazu akadoshim alkach, that's why you have a decree, don't do this during the day, elam came to bayis afel, unless it is a dark house. So that medrash actually sees what you see, and suggests that becomes the source for the idea. Rashi does indeed say, you see it here, Shara'ahu Mishamesh Mitaso. So you do have that.
I'm just wondering how we reconcile that. And I don't expect to deviate us from our study of Suvas, but how we reconcile that with the idea that given that the Avot kept Kola Torah Kulo, did Yitzchak hold differently? He learned it differently, that this was permissible.
Right. So what we're seeing here, at least according to that Medrash Seichel Tov, is that it's a rabbinic decree, and that prior to the existence of the rabbinic decree, it's not binding. There's a discussion about that. The idea that the Avos kept the entire Torah is based on a pasuk also in Parshas Toldos, where Hashem says about him, about Abraham, Vayishmor Mishmarti Mitzvosai Chukosai Vesorosai. He guarded my mishmeret, he guarded all of my mitzvos, he guarded all of my teachings. The Gemara in Yuma says that Avram kept everything, including Ayin Tuf. And then there's a debate as to what Ayin Tuf is, and does it mean Erev Tavshilin, which is fundamentally a Derabanan? What exactly does it mean? Are you trying to tell me that he even kept Derabanans? But according to this, it would seem that you don't keep a Derabanan before it's made. However, I could offer you another answer. I'm scrolling through here and seeing that quite a few people ask this question. Chaim Paltiel asks the question, the Dizakanim asks this question, the Riva asks this question, so there are a lot who are gonna have, you have a lot of reading to do, Chuck. I could send you quite a bit, apparently, on this. I had not thought about the question before, but now we're gonna have to deal with this. But the easy answer to your question I'm just trying to get to where I can see people again. There. The easy answer to your question is that the Avos kept mitzvos asei. We already have plenty of precedent, even on a Deoraisa level, for them not keeping mitzvos los asei, like Yaakov marrying two sisters. So even if it's a derabanan, even if he's obligated to keep a derabanan, which doesn't exist yet, it won't be a los asei that he'll have to keep. That'll have to keep only a mitzvos asei. So that would be an easier answer as well.
But you can't learn that out of Yaakov, because after they converted, it was as if they weren't two sisters. They were born again.
Who converted? There's no conversion in those days. Conversion doesn't start until Matan Torah. Matan Torah is the paradigm for conversion.
If you look, you have ideas of conversion all the time. They talk about it. When they talk about Dina marrying Eo. They talk about her converting.
Do they? Send me a source that has her talk about converting him. That I'd like to see.
Okay.
Dina marrying Eov is old hat for fans of Eov. But him converting is one that would be new for me. So that I'd like to, see.
Unfortunately, okay. It's only a secondary source. I'd have to find out where they are relying on to say that it happened.
Well, fortunately, during COVID, you're stuck at home, so, you could, yeah, spend some time digging up the source. That's what I'll say. Okay, so going back to our Gemara now, the Gemara wants to know, is it all right for him to have the... by the way, that was an ad for the Bar Ilan database. It's really very useful. It's certainly if you want to have discussions with Chuck. So the question that we're wrestling with here, I'm just trying to move this way. There we go, so it doesn't block the Gemara. The question we're asking is, are they able to have relations during the day, or is it specifically at night? That's what we want to know. Tashma. So the Gemara says, come in here from the following. And we bring in Bar Kapara. And Bar Kapara is going to be our voice for the next three discussions in the Gemara, which are going to take us far away from Ksuvos. They start in Ksuvos and then get far afield into our first Agadita of the Masechta. Detani Bar Kapara. Bar Kapara taught. Bar Kapara was a student of Rebbe. Fascinating, fascinating person in his own right, but we're running out of time before my Learnathon, so I want to focus on this. Besula Niseis Baravi. Besula gets married on Wednesday. Viniv Eles Bachamishi. And Bia, first relations, should be on Thursday, meaning Wednesday night. Why Wednesday night? Not because of concern for him cooling off in between, but Hoel V'nam Rabo Bracha L'dagim, because Thursday has a special bracha for the fish. Almana, a widow, Niseis Bachamishi, Viniv Eles Bashishi. She gets married on Thursday. We talked about that already. It came up a while back, but it was a reference to this Gemara, so now we're going to discuss it. She gets married on Thursday, initial relations on Friday, meaning Thursday night. Hoil Vinam Rabo Bracha La Adam, because on Friday there's a bracha of Pru Urvu for human beings. So the Gemara says, Taima Mishum Bracha. The only reason to say they should have relations Wednesday night and not Wednesday during the day is to get the fish bracha. Avo mishumi kurei daita lo cheshinan. But we're not concerned about the possibility that he might cool off before going to Beis Din. So there's a lot that we have to talk about in this regard. There are a few pieces here that require some clarification. But what I'll show you first of all here, and it's from the source sheet, Source Gimel. This is from Bereishis. So we have here the two paragraphs. First, the paragraph for Thursday, and then the paragraph for Friday. So the paragraph for Thursday, Vayivarech Osam Elokim. Hashem gives a bracha to the sea creatures. Lemor Pru Urvu. That's the Thursday bracha, is Pru Urvu for the fish. We also have one for the birds. V'ha'of Yirev Ba'aretz. Shita Mekubetzes asks, hey, why don't we go with the bird bracha? And the answer is, we prefer Pru Urvu because it's one that matches what human beings get on Friday. Vayomer Lohem Elokim, Pru Urvu. So that's why we do that. There's also the idea, where the Shita Mekubetzes mentions, that fish have a stronger bracha than birds, in the sense that fish are hidden from the eye. this goes a little bit back towards Ilan and his comments about fish that we had in the beginning of this year. They're hidden from the eye, and therefore their bracha is stronger, because people won't see them and be jealous of their growth and their proliferation. However, I understand Ayin Hara, fish are less vulnerable to it. So that's the idea. There's more to be said on this, but what I'm going to do at this point, because I have at 8 o'clock, I have the Hanukkah Learnathon Zoom, which everybody is invited to participate in, and I hope everybody will indeed participate. I'm going to put the link in the chat so people can do that. It's going to be 4 half-hour shiurim running from 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock. I'm giving one of the shiurim. Rabbi Yerez, Rabbi Bergman, Rabbi Metzger are giving the others, if I remember correctly. But before